by Yigach. What we want to look into today is the status of Yehuda. Actually, you know that Yehuda became the king of Israel, or members of his family. How did that happen exactly? How was it that Yehuda was chosen of the 12 sons of Yaakov to become the king of Israel? And not only how was he chosen, but when was he chosen? What did he do that was so remarkable that made him the king of Israel? But instead of starting at the beginning, we're going to start at the end, because the end is our parasha. It's our portion. So if you look at, you see the psukim are on the board here. I put them up, and just a second, and I'll try to highlight the places that we're at. Vayigash elav Yehuda. It was the previous parasha, the parasha of Miketz, ended with a little speech by Yosef. Now you have to imagine that the speech is taking place between the king of the world. I mean, it's true he was the second in command in Egypt, but Egypt became the breadbasket of the world. Yosef was the one in charge. He was the one who created the economic miracle that was Egypt at that time. And he had just made a speech aimed at his brothers, which he explained that, you know, whoever stole this valuable cup that he had would have to pay the price. And only he could pay the price. Only he would be put into jail for what he had done. Everybody else was free to go. And that was the end of the parasha. End of the parasha, totally humiliating the family, Yaakov's family, giving them little options of hope for change. And suddenly here we are in Vayigash. And Vayigash starts as follows, Vayigash elav Yehuda. Right, this is like, you know, something that you have to understand. The literary presentation puts Yehuda at the top. Vayigash elav Yehuda, he takes control. Vayomer bi Adoni, he says bi Adoni politely, right? Yedaber na avdecha davar ba'aznei Adoni. Now, who does that? Is that what you do when you have something, when the king had just told you off? He's told you that there's no future, there's no hope, this is the way it has to be. And then Yehuda gets up and he says, I have something to say. I have something to tell you. He says, Ayichar abcha b'avdecha, don't get angry at me. What do you mean? Get angry. With a flick of his finger, he can put you into jail for the rest of your life. He come up to Pharaoh. So look at the Rashi. Rashi says, by saying you should be able to hear, while you fire up the cut, don't be angry. Mikan atala neish said, "Diber elav kashot." Rashi feels it. Diber elav kashot. What does that mean? He spoke harshly. He spoke harshly to Yosef. Yosef, the king of the world. Does that make sense? Ki chamocha kiparo, Rashi says, chashuva ta ba'inai, I think about you kemelech zeh. I think about you as the king. Ki chamocha kiparo. Ki chamocha kiparo. Zeh pshuto, Rashi says. That's the obvious meaning. U'medrasho, the less obvious meaning, the medrash, Sovcha lilkot alav bitzarat, kemoshe laka par'o al yedei ziknati. You imagine that Rashi is saying that kamocha kaparo doesn't mean you're great like Paro, but it means you will fall like Paro. Imagine Yehuda standing there with his brothers around him, and Yosef bedecked in the trappings of the king of Egypt. I mean, today we know a little bit about what that looks like. And it looked good. It was fancy. It wasn't regular. So the king of the world is being told, he says, don't get annoyed with me, because you're going to end up just like Paro. Paro will die from tzaraat, from leprosy. You too, right? My grandmother, Sarah, he says that was enough to get rid of him, and you will get rid of you as well. I mean, what does Rashi think this is? Why would Rashi say that or quote that? It doesn't seem at all reasonable or purposeful. Just as Paro sends out edicts but never does anything, will say he promises and he doesn't do. Avatake, you also are that way. The king so he shim simat ayin shamarta alav, and that's what you said we should look carefully at. Further interpretation, ki chamocha kiparo im tiknitani harog otcha vet. If you really annoy me, I mean, this is like Rashi. Rashi, I mean, how could you explain Rashi? I mean, is Rashi out of it? So you know what's going on? Why does he say all of this? Is it for us? We should feel good. So I think that what Rashi is saying is that there's really a turnaround here. If you read all these psukim very carefully, what you're going to see is that Yehuda was in charge. Firstly, because from pasuk yud chet until Pasuk Aleph of the next perek, the speaker is Yehuda. Yehuda is not giving Paro or Yosef a chance to even respond. The attack that Yehuda was making on Yosef was so strong that Yosef was unable to respond, to say a word, not a word. Pasuk Yutet Adonisha Aleph Davodav Leimor Hayesh Lechem Avo Ach. So now he's doing something you never do with a king. He says, let me review the discussion. Let me tell you what you said. Pasuk Kav V'Nomer Adoni. Yesh lanu av zaken v'yelid zikunim katan v'chiv meit v'yivater hu levado. All of this is Yehuda. He's telling the story over again. Now we're so used to the story that we read through it, we don't pay attention, but you have to pay attention. Pasuk kaf aleph atomer el avadecha ariduhu elai v'asima eini alav. That's my younger brother. I told you. Remember, Yehuda, you were talking to. I mean, it's self-evident to me. It's self-evident to me. He can't leave his father. Okay, don't you understand? Don't you understand what our situation is? Why are you asking for things that I can't actually do? Pasuk Kavdalid, Vahiki Alinu Again, we went to our father, and I mean the politeness is there. Avdecha avi, your servant, our father. And we told him everything you said. Go back and bring back a little bit of food. That was what our father said. Our father said. Pasuk Kav Zayin. Kavav. Anomer lo nuchal eredet im yesh. Achinu hakatan itanu v'yaradnu ki lo nuchal erot pinei ha'ish achiv hakatan enene itanu. We have this problem. We brought our youngest child. We're not going to be able to go back home. I mean, what is this? Who's talking to whom here? Who's talking to whom? Who's absolutely silent? Who's acting in a non-magisterial way? Who is the one who is acting like the servant? And who is the one who is acting like the king? I mean, Yosef doesn't say a word. He puts up with all of this abuse. He's being abused, actually. He starts talking about the family. What his father said, I had two sons born from my wife, the one I really love, by Yetzei Achad Meiti, Vomar Achtarov Toraf, Lo Reiti Vadheina, and I said Tarov Toraf. Okay, so we have a little bit of a problem. Pasuk. Pasuk Tavtet, I'm sorry, Pasuk Tavtet, Ulekachtem gam et ze me impanai vikarao ason varidu varadetem et sevati bera'asha ola. This apparently is a bad thing. Varadeti et sevati, my old age will go down into hell, some sort of hell, sha'ol. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? We come back and they don't see my younger brother. What will happen? I mean, I've explained this to you, King of Egypt. Arevet anar me im avi lemor im lo avienu elecha vichatati leavi kol hayamim. Pasuk lamed gimel. Vata yeshevna avdecha tachat anar eved laadoni vanar yaal im echiv. Ki echele la viva nainenu iti pen erenu pen erebira asher yimtsa et yimtsa. Okay. That's Abraham. He has a plea. I can't do it. I promised my father. I can't do it.
Yehuda,
I'm sorry. Yehuda says, I can't do it. I promised my father. What's going to happen if I go back and I don't have Binyamin with me? I mean, he probably will die on the spot. But again, it's a conversation between two people on an equal level. And one of them is explaining to the other the nature of the mistake that he made. Yehuda is explaining to Yosef that he made a mistake. He doesn't want. I mean, I have this suspicion suddenly that Yehuda knew already who Yosef really was, or who the king of Egypt really was. Yehuda knew it. Why is he talking about his father as though Yosef has a special feeling for him? Why is he talking about the fact that his father will not be able to live through the fact that he's losing another one of his sons, Binyamin, the youngest son? Why is he talking like that? And so instead of responding, instead of telling him, Yehuda, listen, I'm the king here. And it doesn't work that way. What the king says, the king goes. There's no changes. Instead, Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Aleph, V'lo Yachol Yosef Litapek. Yosef could no longer control himself. He was listening to this attack by Yehuda, the Chol HaNitzavim, all those who were standing with him by Yikra. Otziu Kol Ish Me'alai. Velo amad ish ito bidvada Yosef el achiv. He got rid of all the foreigners, all the Egyptians, all the people who were around. And he was there alone with his brothers. Vayitein et kolobiv chi vayishmurum Mitzrayim. That was his reaction. The reaction of the king of Egypt to the pleading of Yehuda, who was by comparison not very impressive personality. That was his response. It was a great cry. Everybody heard it. Even though Yosef told them all to leave, all the Egyptians to leave, they were probably all standing behind some door or other, listening, and all they heard was crying and wailing. And very soon, the word got out in all of Egypt that the king of Egypt was crying. He was crying. Rashi says, Lo yachol Yosef litapek l'kol ha'nimtza'im. Couldn't do it. Lo haya yachol lisbol sheyiyu Mitzrayim nitzavim alav. V'shom'im she'achav mitbayshin v'hoda'o lahem. He didn't want everybody to know. He was going to tell them. He was going to come out, so to speak. And he didn't want everybody to know how embarrassed they would seem, because they, after all, they sold him to Egypt. They caused him a certain amount of distress. Certain amount of distress. Vayishma beit paro beito shel paro, klomar, avadav, uvanav, bnei beito, his servants, the people of the household. Servants are always know everything. Ve'ein zeh lashon bayit mamash, ela kimo bayit beit Yisrael, the house of Israel, not a building. By Beit Yehuda, Miyash need a certain a foreign word. Pasuk Gimel, less Pasuk, I think, by Yomer Yosef Elechav, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, Velo Yechal Echal Lasnot Oto, Ki Nivhalu Mipanav, but not Yehuda. Nivalu mipanav mipnei abusha. They were ashamed about what they did, that they sold. So there's one winner here. The one winner, I mean, the losers are the brothers, and Yosef was also kind of a loser, because this was the time that Yosef indicated, or that it was indicated to Yosef, that he was not going to be the king of Israel. He was the king of Egypt, but that was a temporary position, and he would not be allowed to become the king of Israel. And we see it in this interaction between Yehuda and Yosef. Yosef was the king of Egypt, but he would not become the king of Israel. The king of Israel would go, as we see in next week's parasha, in the blessing that Yaakov has prepared for Yehuda, which includes apparently kingship of Israel. But if I would ask what I think is a reasonable question, what were the things, after all, we know a lot about Yehuda, and he actually lived a kind of a interesting life, you might say. He wasn't like everybody else. So the life of Yehuda, let's look at some of the features of the life of Yehuda and try to understand why he was worthy of becoming the king. I mean, he metaphorically, he was certainly worthy. He stood up to kingship and declared his own kingship. He stood up to Yosef and he spoke to him like an equal. And in fact, everything that Yosef, that Yehuda said was not interrupted by Yaakov, not a word, even though everything Yehuda said was the contrary to what Yosef said. So let's look now at a few points that will remind us of who Yehuda was exactly. Yehuda starts off his life, you see, Bereishit, Perek Kavtet, Pasuk Lamed Hey, Vatar Od Vatelet Ben. We're talking about Leah. Leah had another son. Vatomer Apam Odet Hashem Al Ken Karash Mo Yehuda. That Yehuda was special. He not only had a name, but he had a special reason for that name. And that special reason was Hoda'ah, thanksgiving. But Talmud Miledet, and then his mother, Leah, didn't have any more children. So that the spiritual side of Yehuda was assured. He was the child who caused his mother to be filled with thanksgiving, Hoda'ah. And what was the Hoda'ah about? So Rashi says, it's not on the sheet, but Rashi says that Leah knew that Yaakov had four wives, and that he was destined to have 12 sons. And that means that each of the wives should have had three sons. But Leah here had a fourth son. In other words, she was given some sort of special consideration from heaven and had four sons. And she called that fourth son the son of thanksgiving. The son where, I mean, every child that is born deserves a thanksgiving. But this child was special because she knew that it was extra. It was beyond. It was something that she didn't expect to have. Right, she didn't expect to have that child. Right, so Rashi says, "Apam odeh shenatalti yoter michelki miata sheishli dod." I received more than I deserved. I deserved three sons. I have four sons. So that it's interesting. I mean, something worth noting, that Yehuda's birth was special, at least in the eyes of his mother. And she called him Yehuda. And Yehuda is somehow from the word Hoda'ah, or Hodayah, thanksgiving. He was the child of thanksgiving. The next pasuk, which I reference, is Bereishit Perek Mem Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Elav Yehuda. Leimor, and Yehuda said, "Aidei banu ha'ish leimor, lo tir'e panai Bilti achichem itchem. Rashi comments, ha'ed ha'ed, lashon hatra'ah. Hatra'ah is a warning. You need two witnesses to give a warning. Shestam hatra'ah mit matre bo bifnei edim. That regular kind of warning is when you have witnesses. V'chein ha'idoti bachem, I have given witness to you. But raid ha'ed ba'am, go down and witness, give a witness. Okay, lo tir'u panai b'li achichem itchem. Lo tir'uni b'lo achichem itchem. Don't imagine that you're going to see me unless you bring your brother. The uncle is to a game. Okay, we'll leave that be for a minute, right? So that he was already the spokesman. Okay, lo tiru panai bilti achichem itchem vayoma elav Yehuda, and Yehuda is the one who spoke up, the one who took. I'm sorry, I skipped one, right? Before that, there's a different story of Yehuda. V'yered Yehuda be'et echa v'yed ad ish adulami u'shmo chiram. This is the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Right? V'yed ahi. Rashi says, lama nispecha parasha zo lekan v'yvsik b'parashato shel Yosef. The story of Yosef stops. He sold. And then the story of Yehuda and Tamar begin. Lilamed shehoriduhu achiv mi gidulato kishira'u b'tzarat avihem. Amru ata amarta limkor. Ilu amarta les la'ashivo ayinu shomim lecha. So even in this disastrous act that Yehuda did, he suggested, Yehuda, remember, suggested that they sell Yosef. They had him bottled up in a pit someplace, and they wanted to let him die there. So Yehuda said, Ma betza, meaning, what's our profit? Let's sell him. At least we'll have the money. Right? So here Rashi says that the second source. Rashi says, "Lama nisvecha parasha zolikan." That means, beforehand with the story of the sale of Yosef, and now we have the story of Yehuda and Tamar. "Lama nisvecha parasha zolikan." Why does these two parashiyot come together? We have seek beparashiyot shel Yosef, and the story stops talking about Yosef. Klomar, shoriduhu achiv migdulato. They demoted him, Yehuda, kishera'u b'tzarat avihem, when they saw how unhappy their father was. Amru, they said to Yehuda, ata amarta limachro, you told us to sell him. Ilu amarta lahashivo, to bring him back home, you would have told us to bring him back. Yirushamim lecha. So you see that even when they're complaining about Yehuda, even when they realize that by listening to Yehuda did a terrible thing, even though Yehuda saw it differently, Yehuda saw that he was saving Yosef's life. They were prepared to kill him. So instead, he said, let's not kill him, let's sell him. Then the brothers came along later on and said, if you would have told us to just bring him home, we would have brought him home. But here, look at what they say. Shon hatrash estava drabnim of the edim. Lo tir'u li b'lo achichem itchem. Yeah. L'amed Sharidu Echav Migdulato Kisharau Bitsarat Avihem Amruata Amada Lemachro Ata. In other words, they already instinctively accepted Yehuda's leadership, even though he hasn't done much in the way of leadership, but he was accepted. He was accepted. And so they say to him, if you would have told us to give him back, bring him home, we would have brought him home. The last pasuk, do you see that Yehuda had these qualities? He was like invested or injected with hodayah, thanksgiving, which is a kind of fundamental position vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was Yosef. Yosef had that. I'm sorry, Yehuda had that. Then Yehuda played a role, a decisive role, actually, in selling Yosef. And by that time, he already was accepted. His leadership was accepted by the brothers, although it wasn't formalized. And then there's the last source on the page, Lahorot Lifanab, Kitargumo. Lifnot lo makom ulhorot ha'eich yityashev ba. So that Yehuda's job, says, at Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef, Yaakov sent Yehuda. When Yaakov was about to go down to Egypt, he sent him to Yosef, lehorot lefanav, goshta lehorot, to give direction, leadership, Torah, vayavo arza Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. Rashi says, lefanav, kodem sheyagia lesham, before Yaakov arrives, he wanted Yehuda to set things up. Umedrash Agada, and Rashi quotes, lehorot lefanav, letaken lo bay Talmud. This is what he wanted, was that with Takeinlo Beit Talmud. He wanted Yehuda to make a yeshiva in Egypt. Shemisham Teitzei Hora'ah. That from that yeshiva, the law will be determined. People have shilas, they'll come and they'll ask, and it'll be determined. So we see that Yehuda had what was already special. Even before the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef. But the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef at the beginning of our parsha knocks the nail into the cover. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about that Yehuda had self-awareness, that he was able to see himself as standing opposite Yosef and determining that Malchut belonged to him. I would just like to, on the second page, you turn to the second page. Just 1 second. There's an interesting idea. Interesting idea. In the Tosefta, in Masechet Brachot, paragraph Yud Chet, or Halacha Yud Chet, in there, I'm going to go through the whole thing, but the sentence that I'm interested in, you see, which is highlighted in red now. Mipnei mazacha Yehuda lemalchut. The Tosefta is willing to ask the question, what did Yehuda do? What did he have that was so special? Right? Mipnei sheitzil et echav min hamita, sheneemar, he saved his brothers from certain death. Sheneemar vayome Yehuda el echav ma betza. First of all, he said to his brothers, we're not making any money out of this. Let's sell him. Okay, so the way that Tosefta understands that is that Yehuda did what he could, and what he was doing was saving his brothers from being guilty of the death penalty. Amar lahem daya latzala shetechaper al ha mechira. Oh, Mnei Man Zachar Yehuda leMalchut. Ella, however, there's a stronger reason that Yehuda was given Malchut kingship. Amar lo mipnei ha'anava. It was his humility. Shene'emar v'ata. You will come instead of the child, the young person, so that the Tosefta looked hard and said, low, high and low, to find out what was it that Yehuda had? What was special about Yehuda? And he came to the conclusion, the Tosefta came to the conclusion that it was humility. And the humility, of course, came from his mother, who called him Yehuda. And because of that, he could be classified as having the humility that leads to greatness, because we all know that Moshe Rabbeinu was called Anav Mikol Adam. He was the most humble. He's called Eved Hashem on several occasions, as is Yehoshua ben Nun, but that's another matter. Humility is the most desirable quality of a king. I mean, the king is the one who is in danger of seeing himself extraordinarily superior. The lack of humility is very common among people who easily think of themselves as being more important than other people, and certainly kings are in that category. That's why if you look at the parasha of HaMelech, if you look at what the Torah has to say about a king, you understand that the Torah says that king has to be humble. He shouldn't have too many horses, he shouldn't have too many wives, and he should read the Sefer Torah and carry the Sefer Torah around with him. I mean, kingship from the point of view of humility is a most difficult enterprise. And the Tosefta said, if you're looking for a factor or a feature that makes it possible to understand, that makes it possible to understand that the king has to emphasize one midah more than any others, that's the humility that he needs to have. And even Yehuda, looking at Yosef in a less than humble manner, he was telling Yosef what had to be done, how they had to live, how they would have to do what their father wanted. All of that led the Tosefta to say, Yehuda had the humility which the Torah demands of a king. That's not to say that every king in Israel and in Yehuda had that humility, but it is only that Yehuda certainly had it. And that made him worthy at the time of becoming the king of Israel. So what we've sort of summarized is that the first parsha in this parsha, Tashavua Miketz, Vayigash, right? Vayigash, I love Yehuda. This parsha, Vayigash, Yehuda acts as though kingship is already bestowed upon him. We know that Yehuda was Hodaya, thanksgiving. The Tosefta said he had the humility. Yosef was not credited with bringing Torah to Mitzrayim or making Torah possible in Mitzrayim, even though he learned with his father. That's what the Chazal said. Nevertheless, it was Yehuda who brought the Torah to Mitzrayim. Yehuda who had the wherewithal to stand up as a king against the plan that Yehuda, that Yosef had instigated. And so we have the birth of a leader in our parasha. Yehuda, the son of Yaakov, son of Yitzchak, the son of Abraham. Have a wonderful weekend, a wonderful Shabbos. Be well.